February 10, 2022, it's the Watt for Pedro show.
What do you think about living in life up to this point, man?
Well, I couldn't give you an answer. I couldn't have paired it together well, man, you know? I don't think I have. I couldn't say.
Do you think there seems to be an overall plan to the thing? And do you think it was that your life is predetermined, or that you're your own free agent and you make what you want of your life?
Well, it seems like I make. I believe when you say that you make almost what you want, but in a way you do. But like when, it seems like far that you don't have much to do with.
Much control over.
Yeah, like when is when, you know, you kind of set your course, but when you arrive and things like that, you know. Mm-hmm. It doesn't always happen as you plan, you know, you don't know that's
sure
somewhere else. You know, you kind of set it.
Watt for Pedro show. Happy Thursday. Started off with August Bloom asking John Coltrane about living and laughing. This was back in 1958. Big change in his life, 1957, the year I was born, huh? And then we had Circle Jerks with Red Tape. Because of those Estonian software engineers with their Skype invention, I got with me special guest, Steve Loudon. Welcome aboard, Brother Steve. You got a new book. It's on drummers, but let's go back with music with you. Can you remember the first drummer?
The one that
you heard, of course.
Yeah, the one that probably got my attention the earliest was Charlie Watts from the Stones.
Okay, and what was the first record you bought with your own money?
It was Destroyer by Kiss.
Okay, so you weren't a Peter Criss fan, huh?
Yeah, I listened to Peter Criss for sure playing drums, but I had a next door neighbor who was a friend of mine, and his mom still had all her 60s records, and so she handed me a stack of Stones records when I was really little.
Right. Now, I think Charlie was a Ludwig man. Peter Criss, I think, was a Pearl man.
Yeah.
Ah, so you know, okay, you know about stuff like that. Well, what about the first record you bought with your own money? It was Destroyer?
Yeah.
And the first gig you saw?
Well, so I had two older brothers who, much older than me, and they were into sort of like 70s classic rock and hard rock. So I saw like REO Speedwagon and Aerosmith and Def Leppard.
No, I asked you, what was your first gig?
The first gig that I played?
No, that you saw.
Oh, REO Speedwagon.
Okay.
Yeah.
Understood. And what about in school? Were you part of the choir or the marching band or shit like that?
No, I didn't join any of that stuff at school, but I did briefly take accordion lessons when I was, like, in fifth grade.
But you're more attracted to drummers?
Yeah, that's what I was saying about my older brothers. They had a metal band, and one was a guitar player and one was a bass player. So as a little kid looking up to them, I think that I kind of secretly wanted to start a family band with them. So I think that's why I started playing drums.
Okay, so you actually did get on the drums. When did you get your own set?
Oh, I started playing probably when I was about 12 or 13.
And how did you get that kit? Was it a present, or did you buy it with newspaper route money, or what?
No, my parents were really cool about it. They got me basically the left-hand side of a Red Sparkle CB700 kit, so I had a snare, a rack tom, and a kick drum, and one crash. And a hi-hat.
Well, speaking of hard rock, there was one guy who played left-handed, right? Ian Pace.
Yeah, I mean, he's an incredible drummer.
Because I think there was left-handed drummers, but they didn't play left-handed. They kept the snare over on the port side.
Yep, they would keep it open face.
Yeah, but he actually had it on the starboard side, and then Tom on the other side. He switched around. Going back early, I always thought that was so much different, but of course, he was left-handed. There's just been so much discrimination against left-handed. You know, not just drums, but bass, guitar, all that stuff.
Yeah, you hear a lot of stories about people who are left-handed and their parents or their friends or somebody always hands them a right-handed guitar.
Some friend. You know, the Italian word is for left.
What's that?
The Italian word for left.
What is it?
Sinister.
Oh, yeah?
I wouldn't shit you, Steve. Look, there was something about, you know, it goes back to why I hate this word, the N-word, right? Normal. See, because it was not in the majority, right? Menshevik. No, you're Bolshevik. You're part of the right hand, the starboard hand. It's just ridiculous stuff. Other people say you're born a certain way. Why not just follow it?
Yeah.
But you know what I mean? Humans get into this stuff, right? Oh, that's the way towards, you know, not happening. But anyway, so did you take lessons?
I did very briefly take lessons, but I was a little too jittery, so I was kind of a self-taught garage.
I'm wondering if that teacher, did he say you got to learn right-handed?
No, but he wanted me to dive into jazz and rudiments when I was really young, and I just wanted to play rock music.
Okay. I mean, music's music, so I don't give a fuck. But I was thinking maybe he was thinking of your future, like maybe you, because, you know, a lot of times drummers have to use what's there. It's called a backline or something, especially a crowded urban situation where you can't carry equipment. So maybe he would want you to be, you know, Jimmy could play right and left-handed guitar, no problem. And, I mean, that's quite a talent.
Yeah,
just
for sure.
Flip it over. So that's why I asked that kind of thing. So yeah. He was into rudiments and stuff. I mean, rudiments, I think, are important for any kind of music. That's why I say you can use them in rock and roll. You can use them in jazz. In fact, I think rock and roll is kind of a mule. It's kind of half-breed between R&B and jazz in trippy ways. It was a kind of marketing term. Al Freed gave it, right? Brothers have been using that word since the 20s.
Yeah.
Okay, so you got into the punk movement. But you didn't join a punk band? You just wanted to be drummer for your brothers.
Well, that was the original inclination, but then when I was about 12, some local neighborhood high schoolers played me the Dead Kennedys record in God You Trust Incorporated, and I kind of had my eyes open to punk rock, so I never ended up actually playing with my brothers.
Right,
I joined kind of garage punk and punk band.
Oh, so you did have a band. Okay.
Yeah.
And what? Tell me about that band. What was it called?
Well, I mean, the real early ones had funny and silly names. It was just me and my friends learning how to play, but we were called, like, Persecuted Youth and 6 Feet Under and things like that.
Yeah, those are good names. And did you guys, what would you do? Would you write your own material, or did you copy off records?
Well, that was super early, so we were mostly just making noise. I'm not even sure if it qualified as music. I mean,
I think that's great.
Yeah. No, it was super.
I say that, Steve, because me and D Boone, we copied off records because that's what everybody else did. It was fucking stupid. Well, maybe something you learn some chops and stuff, but the idea of just trying to write your own thing is good. Especially drummers. I'm really interested in drummers as composer. I just had Matt North on yesterday.
Oh, cool.
And he ended up learning all kinds of stuff, but he never gave up drums. And he tells me he composes on drums. You know, Chico Hamilton had a hard time in the 60s trying to get songwriting credit, right?
Yeah.
Because, right, drummers can't write music. Bullshit. Music's music, right? Look, you gave me this live version of Chinese Rocks, Johnny Thunders.
We'll be right back. paws of suburban Cerberus taunt me with bowling green barks of ever-braiding, coming under the sun sort of echoes with snarls dripping off the fang. Dang, but this is almost the country. The lake shimmers just under my eyeballs. I see the ripples afar, near as the boat trundles by under the dog breath. The variations are released ad nauseum, ever the same, never changing. And the green verges right across the slope, burming right up to my feet, and the sky, blue looming above, swallows me whole. Ah, this picket fence wasteland of semi-private luxury. Thank God for this small favor. Willow are we under the trees, oak and ash, carboniferous at the end, but lignum coursing, pulsing, ever so faint, never to be heard, yet turned into structures and lit of cruel carnality into baskets of steel, firing up from the minimum to the maximum of purple clouds rising, delivering unto a acrid dome little drips of something black to heave upon, something to wrap its little raindrops around and drop back down on the ground, wetting us all again from that little match struck. The dogs howling in the distance, maybe they hear me, maybe they don't. They smelled that I cared, and they know that they don't. So they stop. Here they are, they're howling again on the periphery and stopping all the panthers from coming in. Panthers are lurking in the brush. There's small little footsteps padding around there, and the Cerberus know it. The Cerberus will climb any barrier just to get them, and sticks are thrown down upon the panthers and running away from men. Bark, bark.
it took me years. Then we finally had a time and place to meet. She looked a whole lot like a mother. She was who she claimed to be. But I had my doubts as I walked out of the airport to my car.
You're gonna
Chuck of Music started off with Johnny Thunders and the Heartbreakers, Chinese Rocks Live, then Car Thief School, brand new out of Hokkaido, with Thug Machine, Usurped Suburban Suburbs. Yeah, I know people, it's deja vu all over again, but not for you. Chris Kroger out of Texas, great poem. Cremation Lily, brand new, Selfless Maria, 63, the acoustic version of Tropical Fuckstorm, brand new. Noisuka, guy with a poem on his torque, so out of Culver City, speaking of South Bay. Well, not really, huh? Kind of borderline. Last place I saw Alvin Jones, and he was at that gig was Charlie Watts. He was with Les McCann.
Oh, wow.
Charlie Watts was wearing three overcoats.
Really?
McCann was yelling, I wouldn't shit you, Steve. He was yelling at Alvin the whole time, come on, play, you motherfucker. And then Amyphilus from Gothelis, Northern Jaw, Strong Beach, brand new, Loose Cannon, Subliminal Messages from the Factory, Sublimation, Bonus, Printing Out, DC Area, Billy Bio, Turn to Wounds, a new solo trip from him, Biohazard Man. A guy by voices has Bob Pollard, another record, of course, right? Every couple months he's got a new
yeah.
Redevelop out of Dayton, Ohio. And then The Dam, New Hope, New Rose, first punk single I heard, which really surprised me because it was only pictures for us at first. We didn't know what it sounded like. And now we're into, even though you're talking to me, Al Dadina now, used to be Dairy Country. Huh? You grew up in South Bay, so
yeah.
Not the Culver City, but north of Pedro.
That's
talking
right.
West Side. We're talking what, Hermos, Torrance, Redondo?
Yeah, I grew up in Redondo, and I went to high school in Manhattan.
Okay, like there's no Billy on this. There's no fucking Descendants.
Yeah.
There's no Robo.
Yeah, Bill Stevenson is in the book. Jim Ruland actually wrote a whole essay about him, and Bill's honestly one of my favorite drummers of all time.
We got to tell the listeners there, Steve. Getting ahead of ourselves, but one of the reasons why Steve's on the show, people, is because he wrote a book about punk drummers. But we're leading up to this because he actually was a punk drummer. So this band, you say you joined one at high school. What were they called?
We had a bunch of names, but we ended up being called the Wonderfuls.
Do you remember the first Wonderfuls gig?
We played in my friend's mom's condo in South Redondo Beach when we were 16 years old.
Now, how'd that gig go?
It was great. Just a bunch of crazy teenagers. And, you know, we were playing some originals and some covers. And it was just a party. A lot of people.
Yeah, well, me and D. Boone, I remember playing a kegger in Pedro. And etiquette in those days was that dude knew how to play Black Dog better than you. He could take your guitar and show you up in front of everybody. That's why I ask about that shit. Yeah. You know, in the older days, things changed really quick. And then some ways never went back, which was good.
Yeah.
It's trippy how nowadays things kind of stay the same compared to those days when things were changing so quick, you know? So that was a good gig. Now, did you guys end up touring? Did you end up making records?
No, not in that band. We ended up going up to Santa Barbara for college, and we played up there for a while. The first time I think I really recorded, I was in a couple bands on Theologian Records in the 90s, which was a Hermosa Beach label.
Yeah, they had something to do with the... Good God Pan, that fanzine.
Yeah,
The fish sticks and people like that. Yeah, because, you know, I got a little connect, of course, the Black Flag and Billy and Descendants, but Tom Watson. In fact, Tom Watson in The Missing Man took guitar lessons from Milo's mother, not grandma, mother.
Oh, really?
I wouldn't shit you. I mean, there's trippy connects, you know? Trippy connects.
Yeah.
Trippy connects.
Yeah.
And then Spot, you know, recorded everybody at Media Art there in Hermosa. He was actually from Leimert Park, 43rd and Crenshaw. Grew up a couple doors down from, Ray Charles. Saw him get a speeding ticket. He had a guy in the car next to him, right? He was driving all fucked up. But anyway, so you went to school at UC Santa Barbara? Goleta, right? What, Rock Pile Records? I remember there was gigs at the records. Also, there was an old Bank of America that got burned down. Anaconda turned into a club, right?
Yeah, I saw a lot of shows there. I saw Public Enemy there. I saw the Cramps there.
You know what? Chuck D ended up being the professor that teaches at UC Santa Barbara.
Oh, I didn't know that.
I conked at a dude's pad. His wife is a colleague.
Oh, wow. That's
cool. Small world, right?
Yeah.
Because he's from Strong Island, way back east.
Yep.
But anyway, so did you go to college for music?
I didn't. I actually went to college for journalism, and, you know, music and writing have always been sort of the two things I've been most focused on.
But you picked one over the other? You were doing both at the same time, right?
Yeah, I was doing both. Actually, Great God Pan, I'm the guy who interviewed you for Great God
Pan.
Yeah,
that's the name of the band.
When I was younger, I figured, you know, playing
with drums. By the way, that was a great zine. Too bad it didn't last longer, because the stories were fucking happening.
Yeah, Eric Bloom, who ran that zine, was my roommate at the time, and Eric used to sing for an L.A. garage punk band called The Primates. You remember those guys?
Well, you remember the singer of The Blue Oyster Cult? His name's Eric Bloom.
Oh, it's not the same dude.
No, I think they're spelled different, too.
Yeah.
But no, it's really important because E. Bloom, right, he put Stung Guitar on the back of the second album, D. Boone, that's where he gets D. Boone. Yeah. But, okay, so roommate, that was the connect, okay. Yeah, okay. Look, the whole idea of the fanzine, get people excited about gigs by a guy who went to a gig or got a record review, and he's excited, and he foams, right? He writes passionately about it. I think they're very, very important. Also, if you go back to art movements like Dada, like Surrealism, you know, Andre Bertone, Tristan Zara, there was journalist people involved. Marinetti with the Futurists. In the old days, art and journalism did go together. Well, to me, they're they're just different forms of expression. They should go together.
Yeah, you know, funny enough, when I was about 15 years old, I wrote for this little stapled fanzine in my neighborhood. I wrote an article about Easter, that band Easter with Danny.
Danny, right. He did a long time with, who's that cat? Anti.
Yeah.
He had a lot of different bands, and Danny was in that one. Danny was a sweet guy.
Yeah, so I wrote this thing as a little kid about Easter and showed it to him. And he was working at Recycled Records in Hermosa Beach at the time. And
good record store.
Great record store. And, you know, Gary Jacoby worked there as well. And I came in a couple of weeks later, and he handed me a copy of Flipside, and he had gotten my story.
Gary Jacoby, was that the singer of Celebrity Skin?
It was, yeah.
Yeah, he lives in New Mexico now, right?
Oh, I don't know. I've actually been meaning to track him down, man. I loved that band. Don Balls was
right, the drummer man, right. But yeah. Gary was a great singer.
Oh,
I think he was actually the drummer of Sexsick, the band Kay was in with Michelle Bell. But anyway, go on. Danny reads the article and he loves it, right?
Yeah, you know, and I come in a couple of weeks later, he hands me a copy of Flipside, and he had gotten my article republished, which to a 15-year-old fan was just like, the first place I ever got published was Flipside? Like, that was the coolest thing in the world.
Al Flipside and Hudley, good people. Whittier, I think.
Yeah, and Hudley's in this book.
Oh, great. Because they were really important. Besides Slash, right, those were the two zines in SoCal.
That's right.
Yeah. So when you get out of college, I mean, do you do music all through college?
Yeah, I did. I played in a bunch of different bands, you know, and you know, speaking of Celebrity Skin, we kind of got into dressing up and being crazy and playing some glam rock, but... you know, then I moved back to Hermosa Beach and played with the Fish Sticks, and I played with a band called Bookmobile. And then I ended up making a record with a band called Rydell High. And our record was produced by Joey Cape from Lagwagon out of Santa Barbara for his My Records label.
Okay. And what about on the journalism tip?
I worked actually as the arts editor for a free weekly in my hometown for a little while. But then when I signed that record deal, I kind of put writing aside for a little while.
Is that the Easy Reader?
The Beach Reporter.
Next door. Yeah. Right. I remember Easy Reader one time, they had a cover story, The Black Flag Violence Must Stop.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it wasn't the cops beating up kids, right? It's the Black Flag Violence.
Yeah.
That was so ridiculous. But anyway, so you put it down for this record thing. So you get involved with the racket, with the business.
Yeah, I mean,
and what's
you know,
your experience? What, looking back on it, what do you think?
Oh man, you know, anytime you get to like get on a stage or go into a recording studio, like I've always considered myself lucky to have been able to have done any of that. So we never sold a ton of records or anything, but you know, it took me to Japan and I got to play some really cool shows, and I think the record still sounds good.
Okay. And then what happened?
We were on My Records out of Santa Barbara, and then that got picked up by A&M, and we actually ended up doing a video for one of our songs called Self-Destructive with one of the dudes from Devo, Jerry, directed it and played a clown in the video. And then the day the record came out on A&M, the re-release was coming out on A&M, pretty much everybody got pink slipped. So we got dropped.
Yeah, Alan was a great drummer in Devo. He quit to be an electrician, right? So what'd you do when you get dropped?
We did some more demoing, and then eventually I ended up joining this band called Czar, T-S-A-R, and we put out two records. The first one came out on Hollywood Records. We made that one with Rob Cavallo. And
you
then
know
the second...
You know what Czar's a Ruski for, right?
What, King?
Bigger.
Caesar.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Emperor, actually. Okay.
Yeah,
the Latin word Caesar. The German word's Kaiser. So Tsar. Yeah. Okay. And so how was your Tsar experience?
That was awesome. You know, we made a pretty polished sort of power pop glammy record, the first record, and kind of a dirtier record, the second record. And then right around 2004, 2005, I kind of stepped back from music and started focusing on writing again. So that
was
kind of...
Yeah, because you gave me none of the music from any of these bands.
I thought you just wanted music from the book, man. I'm sorry.
No, I'm just wondering. I'm just wondering. I know you wanted to talk about the book. That's why you asked me on the show. But, I mean, I didn't know how deep you were into music. So you could have brought that on, too. That's okay. But, so you want to write about drummers that had, what, like an influence on you?
Yeah. I mean, the original idea for this, I had done
You know what?
Books.
We're out of time. So we're going to pick up on the book next hour. People, February 10, 2022 edition of Watt Pedro Show. Special guest Steve Lydon. Hold tight for hour two. February 10, 2022 is the second hour of the Watt Pedro Show.
Like that. broken. Sun is in the sky, feeling slightly broken. Not even gonna lie, have a little grizzle, have a little cry. Everything on earth now is probably gonna die. Your effort's only token. Life is gonna ride. Better get a move on. Have a little try. Puzzle out the riddle. No point in being shy. Everything on earth now is probably gonna die. We'll be right back.
Watch for Pedro show. Start off second hour. Buzzcocks, you tear me up. Weird about English like that. You got to have somebody say it because there's no fucking consistent. Like the past tense of read, right?
Yeah.
You know that. Ain't a color. Yep. Okay. Hi, quick crack out of Texas with Wombik. That's a word. Son Kevin with Cotton. Horde of Two, brand new band out of Vancouver, Canada. Courage and Fortitude. I say Canada because there's actually a Vancouver, Washington State. And it's right on the border, too. But you're still in the U.S. You just got out of Oregon. So watch out, people, if you travel. Percussed by Pimps out of South London with Discourse after that. Courage and Fortitude is in that. Discourse. A little pun rock, huh? Then their buddies Tom Moody and all the new Greatest Hits band with Anything. Finally, DOA, Slumlord, Joey Shithead, who's actually in the Vancouver government now as a councilman or something. And that was Chuck Biscuit. And for a little while, there's some practice tapes of him playing the Slippin' In stuff, the Black Flag guys. They never got to record with him an album, but he's there. And I think shortly thereafter was on a giant goat for Glenn Danzig's band. But let's get into the book now.
That sounds good, man.
We'll break
it. Yeah, I mean, I had done a couple books prior to this one that were also essay collections where I had a bunch of contributors, and those two were about power pop. And my original idea for writing on something in one of those was to write about, like, Clem Burke and Bunny Carlos and write about power pop drummers. And I ended up giving that essay to Ira Elliott from Not a Surf, and he did a fantastic job with it. But when it came time to put the new book together, I decided to kind of dig into that idea. And instead of focusing on power pop, I wanted to do a whole book about punk rock drummers.
So to understand music, you got to understand genre?
I don't know that that's necessarily true, but I do think we were all kind of raised with genre framework being put in front of us. So it's an easy way to help people understand what the book focuses on. But you could definitely do a book of just drummers in general. I specifically wanted to focus on the kinds of drummers who were really big influences for me growing up, right? So Grant Hart and Bill Stevenson and DJ Bonebreak, guys like that.
Yeah. All three of those guys you didn't give me music from, but John Bulbrick, I first saw him with the Eyes.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, yeah. Charlotte was the bass. Joe was the singer, man. Good band. Blow Up Disneyland was their big song. And so power pop. Yeah, I remember that was a thing. Maybe early 80s. Yeah, Paisley Underground. All these kind of things. New wave.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's why I like kind of like the word punk, because it was so fucking ridiculous, right? A guy gets fucked in jail for cigarettes. Why would you call your music?
But
it seemed like people wanted a shortcut on the truth, like you didn't have to listen to the band. Oh, this is the right tribe, the right category. I got to do the first Ramones album on the 40th anniversary. Joey's brother has this benefit in New York City for lymphoma, right, for his brother Joey.
Right.
Mickey. And he had me and Clem play with Cheetah the first album, man. And I tell you, Clem Burke, to me, is a drummer, man.
Oh, yeah.
He lives up in the valley, came and drove down to Pedro to prac with me like 10 times. So he takes it so serious. It's beautiful. His work ethic reminds me of somebody like Ig. And just great spirit, enthusiasm. Not cynical, not all bitter and shit. He just loves to play, man. I guess he ended up doing a couple of Ramones gigs, but Johnny wouldn't prac with them, so they were disastrous. But he did get a leather coat, and they even gave him a name. I think he was Elvis Ramone.
Yep.
Incredible cat, right?
For
me. And you really get to know a guy when you prac up a record, and that record is a trippy record. Like you were saying about genres and stuff, and a lot of old rock and roll, especially coming from England, a lot of blues, right? But not so much with Ramones. And also, like I say, Ginger Baker, he brought in a lot of jazz stuff to those rock and rollers. Yeah, with the Cream and stuff like that. Listen to Mitch Mitchell, right? It's funny, Jimi Hendrix. Mitch Mitchell, he's my Elvin Jones, right?
Yeah.
That's a trip. That is a trip. Look, you gave me this music here from that first record you heard, right?
Kennedy.
We got a bigger problem now. Actually, you gave me the whole fucking album, but I'm going to take just that song, which is kind of a rework of California Uber House, right?
Yep.
For alcohol, last call for your freedom of speech. Drink up, happy hour is now enforced by law. Don't forget our house special. original. It's called the Tricky Dicky Screwdriver. It's got one part Jack Daniels, two parts Purple Kool-Aid, and Jigger Formaldehyde from the jar with Hitler's brain in it we got in the back storeroom. With fascist cravings, still you make the president. Human rights will go away. I'm now George Chauvet. Now I command all of you. Now you're gonna praise me. And I'll make sure that creatures too. California, Uber Alice. California, Uber Alice. Uber Alice, California. Cause the clan will control you. Still you think it's natural. Never nothing but a master race. Still you live a happy face. Because your eyes can't happen here. Alexander Haig is here. Vietnam will come back, you say. Join the army or you will pay. Join the army or you will pay. California, Uber Alice. California, Uber Alice. Uber Alice, California, Uber Alice. Another drink, a few more pretzels, a little more MSG, turn on those Dallas Cowboys on your TV. Lock your doors, close your mind, it's time for the 2 minute warning. Welcome to 1984. Are you ready for the Third World War? You too will meet the secret police. They'll trap you and they'll jail your niece. You'll go quietly to boot camp. They'll shoot you dead, make you a man. Don't you worry, it's for a job. For President Reagan, making money for President Reagan, and all the friends of President Reagan. California, Uber Alice. California, Uber Alice. Uber Alice. California, Uber Alice. California.
Thank you.
Pedro, so start off that chunk of music with Dead Kennedys doing We Got a Bigger Problem Now. Then Niagara with number six. My Italian bandmates call it Niagara. First, they didn't know what they were talking about. Yeah, just look at it. That smelled a lot. Okay, Stobbits and Waterhouse, brand new. Septic. And brand new from Lake Chionnua, the new dog, A Dream of Self-Immolation. Ray Shin's brand new from him, I think, Reno area, huh? Shop Life. And finally, the Dicks, Dead in a Motel Room. Now, this is the Dicks people, they're Austin band, but then they move up to San Francisco, and this has got Lynn, which I think is really important, because this is a sister on the drums. Now, in the old days of our scene, we had Mad Dog Carla. Did you ever get to see her? She drummed for the Controllers.
I never did.
Yeah. And, of course, Alyssa with the Go-Go's?
Yeah.
Right?
Before Gina?
Well, there was a couple of people. I think Margo and Alyssa actually started the band, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Both of them got thrown out. But,
oof.
Or whatever happened. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. But I saw their first gig at that same place. I saw the Dead Kenny at Other Mask. And it was just them saying, fuck you, Robert Hilburn. he was the big writer for the L.A. Times, right?
Yep.
Every other week's going to be a story about John Prine or Elvis Costello. Yeah, good old days. Love it. Okay, now, the Dicks. Now, I always thought Gary Floyd, the best singer in our scene. I just love the way he sang. There's a live record, right? Live at Raoul's, half Big Boy, half Dicks. You know about that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
And there's a tune on there called Shit on Me, and I just love the fuck out of that. Great band. But when they moved up and got the new people, still a good band. Then they became Sister Double Hatton and stuff like that, and with Lynn still.
She's
Buddha Brothers, and she ended up playing with some of the guys from Faith No More and stuff.
Yeah, she's been around and played with a lot of people. Yeah, I mean, her essay in the book Forbidden Beat: Perspectives on Punk Drumming is like incredible, because she talks about, you know, being a teenager in Reno and seeing an early 7 Seconds gig, and then immediately joining a band called The Rex.
They were the big band. I think they called their scene Skeeno.
Yeah.
And Kevin, he's in Sacktown these days, right? And he's still playing, and his brother too, right? Steve on the bass.
I think I'm going to see them opening for the Circle Jerks at the Palladium.
But he was like doing acoustic stuff, you know. Steve's a trip, right? Skin, guts, and but Lynn, I mean, but the whole idea of the Forbidden Beat. Let's talk about the title. Because Don Bull used to talk about this. When he used that word, he was talking about Oompa, and that wasn't really... To him, the real punk beat is what Scotty Ashton did, and I've Got a Right.
Yeah, you know
what
I mean,
you're talking about? I mean, it never made the record, right? It's not on Raw Power. But it was during that time.
What's the beat he's playing on that one?
Well, to me, that's what becomes the punk beat. If you listen to people like Earl in the Dead Kennedy, right? I mean, Bad Brain. HR's brother. If you listen to there's no Oompa. It's this kind of fast rock and roll Earl Palmer thing. It's not really, you know, the waltz speeded up.
Yeah.
So for Don Bowles, there was a big difference. And for me, too. And if you listen to G.I., he ain't doing Oompa.
Yeah, when I played
you're a drummer, man. I can speak to you about this, right?
Yeah, when I was playing in the Fish Sticks, those guys used to tell me all the time, no Forbidden Beat. And what they were saying is don't trade the one and the two on the hi-hat and the snare. You had to hit them together. But that they used to make fun of the phrase.
You know who's really good at that is fucking Dave Lombardo. That snare and that can be hard to do.
Yes. Those tempos are crazy.
Because the drum set... Georgie, you tell me, balancing on your tailbone with all your limbs going at it.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. I mean, so much respect I got for drummers. The big mistake of the Minuteman was putting Georgie in the back, man. Last 20 years, I've had all my drummers up front. Look, we're at the end of the second hour, February 10th, 2022, Dish Watt Pedro's special guest, Steve Loud. Hook that fire. February 10th, 2022. It's the third hour of the Watt Pedro Show.
Gunshot rings out at the station. Another urchin left and left it on his own. It makes me wonder why I'm still here. But such a teaser is now feeling like I am. And I'm never gonna go. Welcome to paradise.
first slap brings a hankering for peddling. Pedal me to the sea. To the sea with me then. Dismount and then mount. Some seaside rocks perched right close. Enough to feel the kiss of salt spray mist. Your eyes drawn, brain sketches colored in with what your nose catches, lucky lot. How dare you dream of a luckier me? Be grateful, Watt, for what you got. God, what would have you missed? Such eye gifts. There for you, recline. Santa Catalina, her gentle V, between her twin highness engulfs you in. A sense bathing, clean shaven, scent shaking. Whoever, mister, you've witnessed fine marriages bind. The singular with the genuine. Look up, father, son. Hug your pelican son. He loves you dear. Way up high, deep inside your lover's sky. Now burst your thirst and sing your sigh.
Pedro, so start third hour with Green Day doing Welcome to Paradise, then High Five Club, El Sonido del Mar y Nile, Second Man, Missing Man, all together as this big collaboration between Toulon, the big Navy town in France, and Pedro here, right? We got a harbor, even though we ain't military anymore. We're still the biggest port in the country. And so he was tripping on that. Without playing together, we collab. See, you can do different things with the internet than just trade hate and bullshit. You can actually join together and make music. Lag whacking with Rifle. So I guess you owe that man for him putting out your record. And I'll tell you, I got to talk with the singer man of Green Day here in Pedro. He was in town. I was in a band that opened up for something called Gunpowder something. And I guess it was a band he had before Green Day. And he was such a sweet guy. Billy?
Yeah. Yeah,
really,
that's him.
Really sweet guy. Very, very nice guy, that humble man. But let's get, I want to get on the book, you know, because, so your idea was, I'm not going to write about the drummers. I'm going to have these drummers write about their own trips, right?
Yeah, that, I mean, I originally kind of thought about maybe writing a book like that, but I personally, as a reader, and I read a lot of these music books, personally, as a reader, I'd rather hear the musicians and the drummers and the and guys like you who played with killer drummers and music writers writing about it. So instead, I flipped it and got about 26 people to contribute interviews and essays and influence lists.
Now, was some of it tough? Like some guys, you know, I play music. I don't talk about music.
Yeah, I mean, definitely. And I didn't want to push people too hard because, you know, I wanted people to be comfortable and contribute what they felt comfortable contributing to the book. So that's why I came up with the idea of, like, if you think you're a writer, if you want to be a writer, you can contribute an essay. If it's easier for me to simply interview you, I can do that. And then for the real super short stuff, I just offered people, you know, write 3 or 4 sentences about each of your top 5 influences. And so I have those top 5 lists in the book as well.
Now, you know, you had... We played a song from VOA, and because for a long time people didn't know what happened to Chuck Biscuits.
Yeah, there's a lot of mystery around.
Right, here. Right. So that was a fucking bitching thing for you to have him there. Yeah.
Yeah. That, actually, I interviewed Joey Shithead, and he was telling me the story of how Chuck joined the band, you know, because of his older brother Dimwit, and
how
Chuck used to play bongos in their rehearsal studio and sit in the corner, and eventually they threw him behind the kit. It's a really interesting. Perspective.
I thought Dimwit was Wimpy's brother.
No, I think Dimwit and Chuck.
Wimpy was a singer because there used to be a Subhumans in Canada.
Yep.
I think one guy's still in jail for like protesting at a nuclear plant, the basement.
Yeah. He talks about, actually, Joey Shithead talks about practicing in the same studio as the Subhumans.
Right, right. Well, he ends up playing bass for DOA after Randy Rampage.
Yep. Yeah,
remember the first record? Randy's holding the flag.
Yeah.
But you know what? I got to tell you about DOA. Those guys with Black Flag literally built the circuit that everybody tours on. Those guys were really relentless with touring.
Yeah, I mean, Joey Shithead talks about, like, you know, taking out a loan to buy a van and, like, the crazy drives that they were doing to get from Canada to L.A. and to play those shows. I mean... Hardcore 81 is like, you know, that's as far as I'm concerned, that's like a legendary album. And when you ask people and you tell people, hey, I'm going to write a book about punk drummers. I'm going to put together a book about punk drummers. Chuck Biscuit's name comes up over and over and over. Like, everybody points to that.
Well, it's
dude.
Kind of an ambassador, like Flag, right? When the yep. band comes play, all these bands start up, right? These guys were like that. You know, the first album here, though, in SoCal, it wasn't GI. It was actually Plugs and Electrify Me.
Oh, wow.
Chalo,
okay.
Right? Chalo, yeah. We lost him a couple years ago. Beautiful man. Great. I think he ended up playing for Mike Ness in Social Distortion.
Yeah, actually, you know, when I was mentioning those lists, because of the way the book got put together, Pete Finestone, who was the second drummer for Bad Religion, did his list, and he mentions Chalo as one of his 5 biggest influences. And gave
Chalo,
him a couple,
Chalo.
Yeah, yeah. Sorry, Chalo, yeah. Chalo.
It is for
yeah.
Charlie, right?
Yeah, yeah. yeah.
And, beautiful, he had a lot of talents. And
yeah.
he's got a giant Vistalite kit on the cover. The kick drum is huge. Tito and Barry. That's a great band. But man, something about punk music really elevated the drummer, man. I mean, I think it elevated everybody because in some ways, it wasn't just the guitar singer anymore. I think everybody got put on a level playing field in a way.
I actually loved that about the interview that I did with you for the book, Watt, because you said something that was pretty profound to me, which was the most political thing that the Minutemen did or that Dee Boone did wasn't singing just about politics, but was that he made all 3 of you guys equal, right? He made the music.
Well, Dee Boone said that's what, to him, was the political thing about the Minutemen, was the way the band was made up. He thought the lyrics was just thinking out loud.
Yeah.
But he thought what the real political thing was, because we came from arena rock, right? And he thought the idea of putting the drums and the bass up was kind of revolutionary. Because we didn't know about club culture, you know?
Yeah.
You can't hear that shit in a club. I mean, unless you're in a club, right? Especially in those days, the PAs were so bad, the acoustics, they were built for sports. So, yeah, that was his idea. That was his idea. And, of course, me and Georgie were in the...
Yeah, I unfortunately never got to see the Minutemen, but I saw Firehose a few times. And
well, then you saw George Hurley, right?
Oh, man, he blew me away. You guys were so great, but there's not really another drummer that ever played like George Hurley as far as I'm concerned.
No. Well, you know, all drummers are a little different.
Yeah.
They all are. This is my experience from playing with different drummer men and ladies. By the way, I played with an incredible drummer out of Tokyo, Yuko Araki. I mean, all drummers are really individual. This idea of making them all idiots, I just can't understand. I don't fathom it. Especially if you're in rhythm music. Look, here's a lady drummer that you gave me, a band called Faya, right?
They're fantastic.
Let's listen. We'll be right back. Walk for Pedro show, last music for this edition. That chunk of music started off Feia doing Mujer Moderna. Sarah Davachi, brand new from her, Magdalena. And then we had the group Crater Myth and Brother Phil out of Mana with a single version of Apocalypse 6, Bad Horses. And finally, something I never thought I'd play in my show, but Bad Religion, Beyond Electric Dreams. You got to tell me about, who's this drummer lady in Feia?
Her name is Fonny Diaz, and she was in a band called Girl in a Coma before she played in Feia, but they're on Blackheart Records, and they've worked with Alice Bagg, and they've worked with Lori Barbera.
Alice Bagg, man, you know the Bagg's big band of the Minutemen. That's the first punk gig we saw.
Oh, I didn't realize it was the first gig you saw.
Well, it's the first punk gig. First gig me and D. Boone saw was T-Rex, but
wow,
this is what, 5 years later, or something like that, 4 years later. And like I said, things change really quick, right? Arena Rock and Hell punk club gig. So much different. But, man, I looked at D. Boone, and without even thinking, out of my mouth rolled, we can do this. I didn't do that in Arena Rock. Even though we like T-Rex, the guys were so tiny. It was so far away. And there was just something about being really up close. You can see the bass has bigger strings. Okay, so how did you get turned on to her?
Doing research in the book and just listening to a bunch of different modern punk bands, it was really important.
No, but this idea, the lady drummers, because was Lynn before or Lynn after Lynn Perkoff?
Meaning when I got her into the book?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. She was one of the first that I contacted, her and Bon Bon Wheelie from Girl Trouble.
Oh, I didn't get a tune from them, but okay. But yeah, she's in the book. So... And you said she just joined in with Lynn in some kind of spiel?
Yeah, there's a magazine called Tom Tom Magazine that mostly focuses on female drummers, and Mindy Abovitz, who's the publisher, is in the book, and she's writing about Riot Girl. Lynn Perko and her and Fonny Diaz and Laura Bethita Neptuna from the Neptunas all just did this really amazing conversation, video conversation that's available on Crowdcast right now.
You know, talking about lady drummers in the city, do you know about No Mercy?
No.
N-O-H, like the Japanese opera?
Uh-huh.
Okay. They were from the 70s. They had a big song, well, for those days, I mean, their scene was very small, right? Actually, their scene was much bigger than ours here in Hollywood. Caucasian Guilt. And it's just a singer and a drummer. These two ladies.
Cool.
Yeah. And they ended up doing a 7-inch. Something came out on Earcom, you know, out of England. And they ended up having songs for an album, but they were never released. In those days, they were released a couple of years ago. But No Mercy. This idea of punk band actually could be anything. You know, it could be just a singer and a drummer. And that was No Mercy. There was actually a drummer guy named Zev. I don't know about you know him. He'd hang this metal shit and almost get killed by the stuff swinging around. Yeah, punk used to be like anything you could get on stage. And then it kind of changed. As the 80s came, it turned into fast guitar music. But it wasn't that in the 70s. In fact, the first band to sell out the Whiskey was the Screamers. They didn't even have a guitar. And the drummer man, Kevin, or KK, I'm sorry, he played along with the drum machine.
Yeah.
That was so bizarre. But why not? You know, let the freak flag fly.
Okay. Yeah, that was a lot of the stuff that when I was growing up that we really loved what the original L.A. punk scene was doing. Like
you know about Nervous Ginger's drummer?
No, what about Nervous
Ginger's
drummer?
He's like six or seven. He got deported. He's a Swedish guy. He's a boy.
Wow. That's
I mean,
crazy.
A young boy.
I thought Stephen McDonald was young when he started, but six
no,
or
but
seven,
he was a
bassman. Really
he was a bassman.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I think Mad Society had a singer that was like 10 or 11 or something.
Oh,
But the Nervous Gender drummer was like, six or seven or something. And then he had a foreign national. He got deported or something. So I don't know the whole story about that. Edward's still around, you know. They're a beautiful band. Actually, some of those cats, like Geronimo, East L.A., I think Robert was in the band for one gig or something from the Stains. So, when did the book come out? Did it just come out?
The book just actually came out officially this week.
Okay, and how can people get
It's called Forbidden Beat, Perspectives on Punk Drumming, and you can buy it anywhere you buy books, but if you want to go straight to the publisher, it's rarebirdlit.com, or a great place to buy it that benefits indie bookstores is bookshop.org.
And do you have your own website?
Yes, I have S.W. Loudon, L-A-U-D-E-N.
Well, S-W-L-A-U-D-E-N.
Yeah, that's
dot
right.
.com.
Yep.
And from there is all good things, Steve, right? Okay. And are you still playing your drums?
Yeah, I play in a power pop band in L.A. called The Brothers Steve.
Okay. And probably a lot of cats named Steve in the band.
I'm the only one, so they won't call me Steve. They make me go by my last name.
Okay. That's all right. That's all right. But you know what? You got to bring the band on and be on, guests on my show. Will you do that?
Oh, man. I would come back anytime.
Come back with the band, Steve.
Yeah, for sure. We would love to.
Okay. Or anything else you got, you're welcome anytime, Brother Steve. Thank you so much. People, it's been the February 10th, 2022 edition of the Watt Pedro Show. Keep your powder dry.